Good evening. I'm Connie Butler, the Chief Curator of Drawings here at MoMA, and I'm so pleased to welcome you all tonight. Clearly, there's a great deal of interest in hearing from our speaker, Marlene Dumas, so I won't linger long here, but thank you all very much for your patience. It's my great pleasure to introduce Marlene, and I want to, just before I do that, to say thank you to a couple of key important people. First, to the Education Department for working closely with us to organize this evening's event. To the Modern Women's Project and Sarah Peter, who underwrote this evening's event, as well as an ongoing series of projects at the museum devoted to the work of women artists. And to thank all of you for coming. Marlene, I feel it's a great privilege to be here. We've just finished installing the exhibition, which truly looks grand and beautiful. And as someone just said earlier, the work is incredibly human and moving, as you all know, or you wouldn't be here. But it's been my great privilege to work on the exhibition with Marlene. And with no further ado, I just want to turn it over to her, because obviously many of you are here to hear from her. Thank you.
Now, I wonder if this... Oh, it is working. They told me it would be like magic. I don't have to press in buttons or have things in front of my face. So I just want to say tonight I've got some of my family here, which is a terrible thing, because they never come to my... shows, or but they live in South Africa, except for my daughter, and I don't know where my partner is. He's somewhere there, if he is here. So if you have your family on the front row, you know, they start to tell you, why are you sitting on this chair? Why don't you go and stand there? That looks better. And so very, very annoying. So I'll start here because... I've been talking a lot already, and some of the people have seen my clips before. They know the structure. I try to treat the lecture a bit like a stand-up comedian, but I can't say like a jazz improviser because I'm not that good. But I try to react to my own clips. Me and Rudolf has been working together for a long time. In 1996, he made the first television film about me. So we've got a lot of spare footage still left from that time. So then we thought, okay, we will try to make it a bit like a... So it's a bit of a collage of different times, just like the show. It's not, there is a chronology in it, but also not totally. It moves back and forth. And, let me sort of get into it. So the structure is also, the joke is mostly on me and not on the other artists, but you know, the type of questions you always get as an artist. Who are you? Where do you come from? Where are you going? They mostly don't ask that, but always want to know where you come from, as if that is going to explain everything. So we've put in some of these type of things in there. Well, okay, maybe I'll shut up, and sometimes he'll slow me down, and we can look at something for a longer time. I just want to say the show is called Measuring Your Own Grave, and... it's not as somber as it sounds, because the show is also about painting and about the figure in painting and the painter and the model and how the painter, in this case me, sort of has to find a way to get the figure into the canvas, and how the canvas relates to the figure relates to the canvas. In the sense, the canvas becomes the coffin or the grave of this figure, because my paintings, although they sometimes they are portraits and sometimes they're more metaphors for painting itself, and sometimes they're above. And so they struggle between the fact that the figure sort of knows that they are flat images. I am not Dr. Frankenstein, who thinks that I'm going to make a real human being. They are very much aware that they are struggling in this area of the artificial and the painterly. So, okay. I think we can go to the source material of this. You see, this is why I'm a painter, because you can't trust technology. I rather use still the human hand. Okay. There's an old song by the Rolling Stones, "Who Wants Yesterday's Papers?" Who wants yesterday's girl? Nobody in the world. Well, I love yesterday's papers. I never want to throw away any papers, because apart from the images, you see how history repeats itself. You see all kinds of things coming back. And anyway, I also take discarded images and paints and stuff from other artists. This, for example, an artist friend had a box of images, and he said, "I don't want them anymore. Do you want them? You like images?" And most of his images I didn't really like, and there was this one, and I didn't know exactly what was going on here, and I used this image as a, because I liked the stretching aspect of it, and then when someone started to ask me, well, where does it come from? Vaguely in my mind, I remembered that I once saw the film years ago, which made a big impact on me, called If. And it's because I forget always how to say his name. Yeah, the director was Lindsay Anderson, and it was from 1986. Not that that is so important to know, but it's anyway a very good film. So if you get the chance to see it, this was not Nureyev, because Connie once thought maybe, you know, it could have been, but I mostly, that is where it came from. But now we'll go back in time, and I'll shut up for a while. Sweet Nothings was a book that I made, and this was at the when the book was all of my writings. This is me with the black wig on. This was in the 80s.
All right.
And the one is the editor of the book. More sound. Karaoke singers, but it was lots of fun. And okay.
Is nie van hier nie, maar ook nie meer van daar nie. My studio is my huis, my land. Soos 'n slak sy skulp het om in te woon.
Every piece was small and I didn't have a coat.
I am the third person observing the bad marriage between art and life. Watching the pose and the slip, seeing the end in the beginning.
That I was so proud
of. He loved American cars, and I grew up on a wine farm in South Africa, and that was pretty much the brother.
As she sold, she told a story from the Bible she had read about a coat of many colors Joseph wore, and then she said, "Perhaps this coat will bring you good luck and happiness." And I just couldn't wait to wear it. And Mama blessed it with a kiss.
Okay, a muur op zit is
niet.
Okay.
Sometimes it's hard
to be a woman. Given all your love,
there's Devil Mountain, that's
one man.
The mountain of Cape Town.
You have bad times.
This is the eucalyptus trees on the farm.
You have good times.
This is what the filmmakers made me do.
Doing things that you don't understand. But if you love him, you
and when I came back, it was
film,
deserted.
Op de spelregels van de verbeelding en niet van de werkelijkheid. Nog van de schilderkunst. Deze drive-in bioscoop van mijn jeugd heette de Skyview. De sterren in de volle maan verstoorden en vermengden zich hier met het licht van de filmsterren. Hier begon mijn fascinatie met het close-up en de gespeelde blik. Die doet alsof het speciaal voor jou bedoeld is.
Oh ja. Just before we stop it there. I always like to put in works of other artists and how they do it, because that makes much clearer the differences between me and them. If another artist can really show you very well how they do it, then this is, I see similarities but big differences between me and my archive. So, but I love this fragment from this film.
We go there and have a look at the archives.
What an extremely good idea.
To take you to our jungles.
Immediately.
After you.
The most important archive is the one of the images from which we will create and compose our pictures. From time to time, perhaps every 3 or 4 years, we will stop making pictures and take hundreds and thousands of images of ourselves, of indoors, of outdoors, all the subjects which we feel are inside of ourselves. And those are categorized into context sheets and into negatives. They're numbered and color-coded.
Like you can see that for ourselves, we always use a red dot, no? From urban, we use a blue dot. For different people, like when we have models, we use a yellow color. And yellow we use even for when we took the negatives of piss and sweat. Sweat is odd, under odd. And you see here we have the negatives. They are all numbered. You can see that...
I'd like to have my
here starts
like
sweat,
this,
number one, number four, number seven, all for now, two.
Goes up to, what's the change subject?
Sweat,
this
all sweat
goes from one
to money.
Then tears, because through the microscope we took many, many images of tears, and then of money. I think that's why that's in this category.
And maybe sometimes we never use them, and we take them again and again. And maybe after 5 or 6 years, we are able to use them, because it takes a while before we are able to accept the subject, to accept that subject. And that's why we are taking the same subject again and again, until they work.
Okay, that was Gilbert and George. But we're not going to fight about that, but they're not, painters, in the sense, so then you have a painter, you have Richter, but also very systematic archive. And you'll see the difference. I couldn't really even call my archive maybe an archive, but so this is where these works came from. Here you see me in the year, 1988. Nothing has really changed. I just got more boxes and more of these and more of that. And so there I'm speaking in Dutch, saying, you know, this is my computer. At that stage, I had no computer. So you see, I'm much younger, and I'm still very excited to see a camera. So I'm going through my type of archive, if you can call it that, and this is the type of pictures that I collected. This is the wife of Lumumba, and this was when her husband was assassinated, so it was a sign of mourning. Some pictures I didn't use. I just wanted to say sometimes with some of the pictures, like the crying Bastian Ader, I didn't do anything with it, but it was the first time that I then saw in art then a male artist actually crying. So, and it took me many years indeed till just recently I worked with the images of crying women. And always in Crimes of Passion is another image that I kept for a long time. See, so I have, this was, in those days I was struggling with this whole, this is the Malcolm X's wife, Lumumba's wife, Winnie Mandela. Can you just stop it there? This is an old work where, but I was struggling again with the fact of how can you use images, how can you use the sadness of others, also with the public image and the private, because all three of these women, something terrible had happened, and you see Malcolm X's wife just came out of the mortuary, and immediately you have all the microphones in front of her, and I made a little cartoon of myself on a little block there. So this is maybe not so much the best works, but this was that time struggling with this whole thing of the difference between the media and what can the painting do and all those things. So, Here you see here I'm talking about
die kunstenaar wil die aandacht. Oh, in this case, the kunstenaar is, he will the aandacht.
What I'm explaining here in this little form was, I'm saying that this Snow White and the Broken Arm is also a bit like a self-portrait almost, that of the artist, among other things. But the artist wants the attention. She wants all these people to look at her, and at the same time is not interested and does not want to tell all her secrets to all these little, be it managers, I call them collectors, whoever. But this painting this is very a layered painting. It had many people interpreted in many ways. I put in the little dwarfs. I took them out. I brought them back again. She had an apple in her hand. The apple went away. Since I started to do solo exhibitions, I always wrote my own little parallel text, not so much to explain the works, but to give a hint of how my thinking, or what I was struggling with at that time. And the nude I placed against the naked. I wanted nakedness. I didn't want the nude. This is other ways of using source material. This was a snapshot of myself, which I used for the Evil Is Banal painting. I was not really that interested in doing self-portraits. This is Meshekwa. This is painted recently, but you see certain things come back. This was he himself gave me this, and and so I use this image of him as a source. He's a good friend of mine and a South African artist living in. Now we're with the double portraits. This was my, we're back now to the 80s, 84, 85. I wondered how can you see, I was, maybe can we stop a little bit? Rob. I was trying to work out how can you, again, in film you deal with sad love stories, and music you deal with that too in songs, and how can you make a painting about that? So that was me and him. That was the end of our relationship. Luckily, we're friends now, but there, I don't know if he was so happy with that painting. That was also the period that much later people made a link with Nan Golden, because at that stage I used, I did also not call them portraits, I called them situations, because it was more for me what happened between the people than trying to make a realistic portrait of myself. So here I use myself again in a different situation called the occult revival. And this is also, I think, a more a filmic thing, that the images, they actually look at you while they're supposed to look at one another. This was the Polaroids. That was the period of the Polaroid. Here we are. Let's just keep it there for a while. Just want to say, in certain periods, I use different types of images, like the Polaroid I used for a long time, and it came back in other times. But then the newspaper type of images is a whole different story, and this is the snapshot. And I haven't really shown this in the lecture, but because the painter is really one of my favorite paintings, and here you see the difference also between the actual painting and the snapshot. So in the reel, she did actually do this to herself, because she was drawing on paper, and me, the mother, I didn't really. I was talking to somebody else, and there she stood. So anyway, so this was the source for the painter. Although it was my daughter, it is not really only about her. This is Diane Arbus. She was one of the first photographers, which I never used a photograph of Diane Arbus. It's funny, I didn't want this. Now I talk as if I'm supposed to talk in here, you see. Silly. When at art school, then they always told painters to look at painters, and I was struggling with who should I look at, what did I want to do, and then the photography lecturer said to me, "Have you ever seen the work of Diane Arbus? Because I feel there's a connection with what you do." So that was for me, quite a revelation to start to look also at related things. This is Van Gogh, Vincent van Gogh, because also what I want to say, often people talk about my use of babies and so, as if I was the first one to do certain things, and it's nice, but I don't want to take credit for things which isn't true, because this is Otto Dix, also quite special, this baby. This is Freud. Lucian Freud. So I don't have Picasso's here, but I just wanted to say, okay, can you keep that there? That the males have actually also painted the babies, or some of them did. This is, Peter, could I just, so this is my brother. I mean, I shouldn't really do that, but we do that tonight. And if you give him a chance, he's the preacher man, eh? Then he'll talk to you about South African politics, the church, God, and everything. So we have to keep him for a later time. And it was the gaze of his type of eyes that. And I think what makes this painting also, on a formal level, not only formal or psychological level, interesting, is the fact of the black eyes with this this sort of baby face. Anyway, this is called the Baba. All right. And you see, and this is a picture of the work in the MoMA now, and then we made different from different times, different combinations, because also, I put in this, this is Alice Neal, this beautiful self-portrait, and I thought this was so touching that she had the courage to paint herself like that, and in a way, and the Andy Warhol, I think, is one of the most beautiful paintings too. But so I made an attempt that you'll see just now, but I think I think Alice Neal is better in this case. This is called The Drunk. And so,
home is where the heart is. My fatherland is of Africa. My mother tongue is Afrikaans. My surname is French. I don't speak French. My mother always wanted me to go to Paris. She thought art was French because of Picasso. I thought art was American because of Art Forum. I thought Mondrian was American too, and that Belgium was a part of Holland. I live in Amsterdam and have a Dutch passport. Sometimes I think I'm not a real artist because I'm too half-hearted and I never quite know where I am.
The other artist is Marijke van Warmerdam, and it was three women that year. It was not only me that was in the Dutch pavilion, but it was Maria Rosa, Marijke van Warmerdam, and me. And this Magdalena group of paintings I produced specifically for Venice in that time. Oh, yeah, this is very nice. Here you see our daughter for the. This is an unusual situation because that is the painting of Jan Andriessen, my partner, and we are so different in our work that we are never placed together. So this is one of the few times it was in the collection of the Stedelijk Museum that that we've ever been placed together in a space. And so the poor daughter has to grow up between these extremes.
I think I met her. I met her in the early 80s. We were both artists in the Sydney Biennale or Biennial, I don't know how they call it there. And that was my first time out of the United States, and she's one of the first European artists that I met. So I met her in Sydney, Australia.
Did you know her work already then?
No.
What do you thought about it when you...
When I saw it? I don't know. I thought it was interesting work, yeah. But I was really overloaded at the time, and so many artists, and it took me a while to figure out who was who and who was doing what.
Okay, just before, I just want to say why I put that in also is I felt the same, this thing of group shows and things, and you are placed together with other artists, so you don't know who they are, you don't know why you're placed together, etc. And so it was very sweet to find this again. And now he's really trying to be polite also and say, you know, it's fine, but I'm sure he did not really know. Okay. Now, another issue that people has... asked me a lot is being a woman and being a mother, how do I treat the subject matter of sexuality and children? And
I got this long list of questions that I'm supposed to answer now.
And also and that relates also to how you treat politics. And someone asked, when does it become obvious, or how do you avoid becoming obvious or sentimental? Well, I suppose it depends on your way of looking at these issues. The issues are not really that obvious. They are quite complex. So, in a sense, when I was young, I never painted a dead person because I did not know how to treat that. So sometimes I think I'm only painting the dead now that I wanted or that affected me in South Africa in the 70s. And what is so sad about life is that indeed people, talking about subject matter, people do not seem to learn at all from their mistakes. Because here we are again in totally wrong wars all around. And we again choose for the apartheid of polarizing issues instead of trying to see that things are much more interrelated and you should always talk to the enemy.
See, here comes the preacher in me out too, right? See, I've got the same thing. Some of these works you'll see in the MoMA show, but this was how they were first exhibited in the gallery Paul Andriessen in Amsterdam. And then I only had these male figures, and the only female was the skull. I mean, I can answer questions also afterwards about some of the things, but... with this period, I also used a lot of front cover images of the Dutch newspapers, images apparently that wasn't always shown in the... there's Mr. Bin Laden also, when he was young. And some images, some paintings took a long time. I would try and reject them again. I'm only putting this in also to say that when the hooded figure, people always spoke about when they saw it about 9/11, and while if in the hooded figure is definitely comes along from all kinds of times, as you all know. So anyway. So this painting went through difficult stages also of... this is called Dead Girl. This was also from that period. The source material I had in my archive for a very long time. This was the first time the hijackings in the 70s, and that I saw these type of deaths in color and in newspapers. And here you see the different scale. I didn't paint her for a very long time. Could we just stop there? But, I painted the little green guy, the dead man in the 80s. And with me, the work is a mixture of things happening in my own life and fears and things, and then mix with other things that happens in politics or around. But you see, in the way it's treated, this figure was treated in a much. This doesn't feel as. How can I say? The dead girl, I find a much more frightening image for myself also. And I also, here, I just want to say, when I had my show in South Africa, I had my first retrospective in 2007. I found that I had all these boxes still of newspaper clippings, of images that I did not use at all, but... So that is where that statement of mine comes from, that maybe sometimes you do something later which is related to things which you didn't do at the time that they were happening. The top sources was the source of Yen, which was actually from a film Fly of Yoko Ono. And she's a little bit... maybe out of place in this sequence now. Let's see where we are now. Oh, yeah, the thing about violence and painting. In Japan, so I had these last 3 years, I had these three continents. I had Japan, South Africa, and the USA. And in Japan,
we made the relationship with the installation with a Japanese artist called Joshi Toshi. And we just keep it there. But I just wanted to say, so Joshi Toshi was from 1839 to 1892. And they are woodcuts, but beautiful. And the combination of violence in his woodcuts, where things actually happen, is from a different order than my paintings, where the painting, where you never see what is actually happening. Here you have a whole narrative with, you know, while he's murdering the person, everything stands for something, but we've got a Japanese expert can explain it better. But all I'm trying to say, so if one describes a painting in a certain way, it depends very much also which other images you know, because in certain cultures or in other places, I don't believe that a painting exists in a vacuum. It depends what is your reference to other things. Okay. So in a sense, I think becoming a mother has rather helped me to have more sympathy with the human race, but it hasn't changed my basic attitude towards my painting, because to make a painting is a specific manner of dealing with things. You also have to look at other paintings. So I think looking and starting to appreciate the history of painting has affected me in a certain way more in relation to painting than being a woman. Here you see Caravaggio. This is in Syracuse in Sicily, and this painting inspired me. It was the funeral of Santa Lucia, and as you know, Caravaggio, he loved men, and so it's lovely to see how, even though it's called the funeral of Santa Lucia, she's really there, small in the middle, and the big guys are standing in front. Beautiful painting, and also the fact of so much space up there. But I only took her out of there and used her for my Lucy. This work that belongs also to the MoMA. Unfortunately, it's not hanging now. I used not Richter's painting, but his source, because I was also always interested in what happens if you you see how small they are in the real. Also, this is in his studio. Just keep it there. This is called Stern, and I thought that the difficulty with saying what a painting means, this whole thing of interpretation and meaning, often people just talk about the subject matter. Okay, is it a dead girl? Is it? But there's many dead girls. There's many alive women or so. But it depends also on how the content of a painting has to do with the difference of approach of how you approach it as a painting. So this is not to deny subject matter, but this is a total different painting, although than the Richter, although it started from the same source. Yeah, I have a question here about, could you describe your general painting process? That's a difficult one. But I think the one thing that I've learned is to stop when you are not concentrated. That's why I make less and less paintings, because I more and more have all kinds of nonsense that takes away my concentration, unfortunately. But even when I was younger, I only started to really work properly late at night, when everyone was asleep and when the phone would stop ringing, and also that I have worked myself into a
a state also of where you come to a point where you look at that canvas and you don't just, you know, when I was a student, a terrible thing that painters do, often they like so much to paint that they keep on painting as if they all have a problem with a horror vacuum that they have to try to fill in. And so one of my best advice for a painter is please don't do anything when you don't know what to do. What I mean by this what is at least you don't have to know exactly what will happen, but you have to make a decision. And that's why when you copy yourself, it is mostly quite a dead painting, because then you don't have the speed. For me, the process of painting is an act in time. The most difficult thing to do is to decide when to do something and to have the feeling that it is at all, you know, that people should do anything. So I try not to overdo the paint. I try to indeed have as little paint as possible, but that depends on the fact of how certain paintings happen extremely fast, because then I'm in such a state of tension and I'm a bit scared of my subject matter, and I have to make a move. But I also don't want to have too many possibilities. I have to exclude possibilities and make some decisions. So that, I think, is my better paintings. There is also paintings that is much more labored, and they have got layers and layers because you just can't find something that you want. So there's different ways of approaching it, but my preference is the works that does not have this these effects of the you know, to show how clever you are. And it must the painting that I now prefer for myself in my own work is the painting that almost look as if you know, nothing has really been done. The painting that is not impressive in its technique, in the sort of cosmetic sense of the word. The barer it is, the more naked it is, the better, I think, a painting is. Thank you very much.
I'm almost finished, but this is an example of a bare painting. This is one of my last paintings. This is a very small painting. This isn't the show, but it's really small. So called Magnetic Fields. This is a homage to Margot Hemingway. And because my last exhibition at Frank de Mark, that's where it came from the Playboy. I never knew she this is Zoe Leonard, which inspired something else, because at a certain stage, everyone always only because that suddenly everyone discovered the Courbet. So everything they, every time they saw something of a female genital, they thought it was inspired by Courbet. But actually, I wasn't directly inspired by him. I was inspired by other things. It's also very small painting. So when it's so big, it really looks totally wrong. It looks like a big house, which it isn't. It's a very small place where you can't enter. So this is in the MoMA now, just a position that I haven't done before, but which I really think it's very beautiful, because you have the vanitas, the old still life of life and death. We're moving to my American painting. This was the source material of the dead Marilyn. And in a sense, I believe very much like Picasso always says, I don't seek, I find. I'm not really I don't so much. People sometimes ask me, You know, how do you choose your subject matter? I think the subject matter chooses me. I don't sort of go and it fell out of the drawer, the newspaper, at the right moment, and I thought, here's the... And that was before the Obama time, so that was really sort of bad time. So poor Marilyn, dead Marilyn, had to carry it all. Okay, just quickly show you this. And then we're almost there. This is also a very small painting called Glass Tears for Man Ray. This was Marilyn Monroe that he put in. That's rude. Look at the poor artist standing. This is my self-portrait at noon. This is the last self-portrait I made of myself. This was the source for Whom the Bell Stole. It was the LP cover. Here you see a shot in the studio. It's a bit, you can see the different scales. You see, so I actually do not show everything I make. Well, everyone says I don't edit enough. It's not true. Okay, now... This also is his fault because it's very embarrassing, but you see me drawing on the floor. That was for that first movie. I'm very unhappy that the cameraman is standing up.
Oh, om te beginnen met het helpen.
But the reason I let it stay in is just that you can see again that the work is not really as realistic as it looks. I mean, especially the drawings, it is the water and the stuff goes its own way. You react to the momentum and you have to act fast of what is happening on the paper. And it's and then the illusionistic bits you sort of add on top of it. Very unhappy artist. and after this was shown, then I think you should really start to work on the pencil and stop doing this. But it's hard to. To look at yourself like this.
And so all the cheap tricks, huh? A bit of lucht maken and so forth. Eindelijk alles wat je niet behoort te doen.
I always think I think better when I don't have shoes on. And then I read that some Chinese artists, here. Would actually draw when they're naked, in the old days, because it's better for you. Always goes too quick. Okay, can we just stop here a little bit? I'm a bit slow tonight. You have to forgive me, because I should do this talk after the opening, not before. But still, I'm trying. But I just want to say this is... what I call my anally friendly drawings. And the term is not from me. I got it from someone else. It was a very well-written piece on the work of Wolfgang Tillmans. And the writer said that he made anally friendly works. And I thought that was so sweet. Why we put in the pornographic photographic images that you can also just see the big difference between these different worlds. Miss Pompadour and Mandy, the yellow one, they were all inspired by that same picture, although they look quite different. And if you isolate details, you'll see that they're quite abstract. They're more suggestive than you think.
This is called direction. And, okay, so we almost, we sort to end with almost a little bit of this.
They say art no longer produces beauty, she produces meaning. But I say one cannot paint a picture or make an image of a woman and not deal with the concept of beauty. At the moment, my art is situated between the pornographic tendency to reveal everything and the erotic inclination to hide what it's all about. The painting is the secret. The painting is not a pervert with a raincoat. It turns its back on you and minds its own business. If a prostitute is a person who makes it a profession to gratify the lusts of various persons for economical reasons or gain, where emotional involvement may or may not be present, then it seems not so far removed from my definition of an artist. Artists usually love to pretend. Artists usually pretend to love much more than they can handle. They want everyone to want them, while they don't want anybody.
It's enough of tonight. We have things. Ooh, we have things. We have things. Ooh, we have things. We have things.
That was it. Okay. Yeah, now you always get to the thing if anyone wants to ask a question.
And we have microphones, so if anyone does, just raise your hand.
Oh, my goodness. I hope that you would... all need a drink, but you want, okay.
In Australia, you've been curated, your work's been curated in a couple of shows under the theme of intimacy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You haven't mentioned the word intimacy at all in your talk today, and I just wondered how you responded to being curated under that theme.
Well, why? I mean, this wasn't... I wasn't so very clear tonight, I have to admit, but because the show is hanging here, I'm so pleased that you can see the works in the reel, because that is actually the best way to see the difference between... you know, that, as I say, the scale is also very important. So when you are actually walking in the installations, you'll... Then you, I think, yeah, that's why I didn't really speak about that so much, because you can actually see the difference between these heads, for example. They're not so intimate. They go, woo, and that, and then the other things go like this. And so it's something, I think, that's very important. In reproductions, it's always very terrible, because then it's totally lost. But seeing, as I said, that you do have the opportunity to see it in the real, I think it is something that one has to experience.
So you're comfortable with that?
Yes, I.
In the same sense that perhaps Lucian Freud would be regarded as having an intimate theme, your work in the same sense of that closeness?
Yeah.
Subject matter to artist and subject matter to viewer?
Yeah, but there's a difference. Also, sometimes you can have an intimate subject matter and you can make an unintimate painting of it, or you can have a not such an intimate subject matter. And so this is also the interesting thing with
with the pornographic image, for example, or the so-called pornographic image? Because I have to admit, I did not see the shows that you were talking about, but I can imagine it. I wasn't there then. But the term intimacy I do relate to that. Because, for example, if you, at the moment, there's also... I only saw a few shows in Chelsea, but for example, you can go and see Richard Prince or somebody like that, and then you'll see there's also use of you could say there's also pornographic imagery, but it's a whole different kettle of fish. So, and now I'm just talking about the notion of intimacy. Again, you have to compare it to something else. As I said, so some of these works. It's intimate in scale, but maybe not you wouldn't think of the type of source material as so intimate. But this is not to tell you have to buy the catalogue, but it is true that Richard Schiff wrote a beautiful essay on that aspect. And he's a much better writer than I am, but you know how this... But that's also why I put in the photo, the pornographic image, for example, because there's such a big difference between the treatment also and this psychology of the color and the... I don't know if I answered the question, but... Yes?
When do you find a name for your painting?
The title mostly, almost always comes afterwards. Because sometimes you start somewhere and the painting goes totally a different way. For example, say Snow White and the Broken Arm. I started with, she had a dress on and then the dress got removed and then the arm was in such a way that a fellow painter said to me, but Marlene, you can't have an arm like that. The arm looks as if it's broken. And then I thought, oh, that's very good. I'll take that. So you have this dialogue with the painting. So and then you see where the painting takes you. For example, the painter, I showed you, I had the snapshot, and I knew this is going to be a painting. But the snapshot hung in my studio for a very long time, and then, after I. The painting happened very quickly. I simplified it, and also, as you saw in the reel, she had more sort of symbolic things on the stomach, and that had to go. But then I had the painting, and I thought, what is this about now after it is done? And then I thought of the noble savage of Rousseau, that notion. Thought also of the fact of body painting. So I had all these different associations in my mind. And then for me, it came together that, you know, it's the female, it's the painter. And so I'm very happy. But sometimes I have to admit I also have sometimes a bit of silly paint. Title or a bit of a descriptive title, but it always comes afterwards. Yes.
I would like to thank you for sharing so openly about yourself and some of the ways in which you've been showing us doing. I'd like to thank you for being so open about. I've been to a variety of different artist talks, and I have never been to one where someone will talk so movingly about kind of your very special way of kind of looking at life and actually painting in front of the camera and talking about comparisons with other artists and the intimacy and some of the images that you showed. I think it enriches so much of us being able to go and see your work, to kind of hear you talk about it as well as, just seeing the visual image. So I just want to say thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of pictures, the photograph you, black and white. I saw you a lot of pictures using as a resource as black and white. And how you, since it's black and white, how you choose the color, have you already decided when before you painted them, or you using the picture of the black and white and you use some reference else?
It's a good question. It is also interesting that at the moment you have here exhibition of Van Gogh, The Colors of the Night. And in my South African catalog, I used a quote by him where he says he wants to paint a friend, a poet friend. And he's explaining how, you know, how he uses his colors to, you know, arbitrary in the sense of, you know, the face turns blue and the greens and the stuff. Certain works, there's a portrait of my grandmother called Martha, the Oma, and when it's a portrait in that sense, then I use the color in a very simple way. I think, you know, she was a woman who loved to wear blue and light blues or so. So then I didn't show a picture here, but it's hanging in the show, and she was by that time already not alive anymore, but she was a big matriarchal woman, you know. So and then the way of the painting, she looks a bit like she's a type of god in the clouds. So sometimes my reasons for something can be quite simple. So in a sense, that is a bit her color. But then in other cases, you know, it might also be that, because I've never really liked or didn't quite know how to use brown and orange a lot, for example. Orange is a different, difficult color, and then you want to make a painting, and then all you've got left is your oranges and your browns or so. And then you think, all right, let's use it. So indeed, once someone asked, you know, they wanted to make a picture book of artists' palettes and how they mix their colors and so. And I said, no, you know, this is nothing for me. I mix on the canvas a lot, and I late at night also. I'm very lazy. I mean, not lazy in that sense, but I mean, I step on the paint on the, you know, instead of taking it like this, I use my foot. So it's a very physical process, but also lots of chance and reacting, because that's also why I say I'm still in a sense, a little bit of an abstract expressionist, in the sense of that the performance, you perform on the canvas, even if it doesn't feel like that maybe in the first instance, but the color indeed is used in, yeah.
I know that you studied psychology or psychoanalysis for a period, so I don't know if there's anything. I'm kind of curious about your movement, your choice to move towards that or away from that in relation to painting.
Well, I never thought to stay in Holland. I mean, this is not to say something bad about my home country. I mean, house country, or do you say, because I lived there now for so many years, so obviously it can't be that bad a place. But I always wanted to go back to South Africa. And it was, so at a certain stage, you know, I studied there for 2 years with this bursary of the university. And I always thought, well, if I go back to South Africa, which I wanted to do, I wanted to do something more social. I found art a bit an egocentric thing. See, I thought I wanted to combine it with something else. So that was one reason. And also, I wanted to, at that stage, stay longer in Holland, because I was still only starting to understand a bit of the culture in Europe. And so I thought, I don't want to study art anymore. I also had a bit of the thing sometimes that painters are stupid, you know. So I thought the psychologists, they are more intelligent. So I'm going to study that. And I also was interested in the psychological aspects of and how do you read visual signs and so. But then the psychology was so statistical based and so much maths and so. And they also
yeah, I thought, no, no, I'll go back to painting. Yeah, so it looks a bit depressive, you know, started also a bit silly 2 years of psychology. So, yeah, so it wasn't really that I wanted to be a psychologist and then I became a painter. I always loved to make images and to cut out images, but I always felt a bit guilty about it. Well, I'll tell you just one anecdote. Once we had to do this test, you know, and that you had to look at faces, and then you have to say if they're stupid or if they, you know, from their expressions. And I couldn't do it because I thought this is stupid. You know, you can't. We all know. I mean, we have Cindy Sherman telling us that, but we all know. You know, that's why they can never catch somebody when they change and they put on a beard and everyone, you know, because of people's still very simplistic notions of thinking, you know, that you can read certain things if someone's eyebrows are like that or their color is like that, you know. So that I only realized even more so that people's ways of looking at images are, you know, needed some, yeah.
Just a quick question, kind of tying in with the psychology. You mentioned earlier, which I thought was really interesting, that sometimes you're scared of your subject matter, mm-hmm. which obviously, you know, some of the paintings, I mean, that is totally understandable. But what I'm wondering is, when you've gone through the process of painting and then the painting is finished, what happens to that fear? Is it still there? Is it different?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there is, I suppose there is a certain sense of a therapeutic aspect in painting. I think so, yes, yeah. Because somehow to make it visible, that's also why I understand storytelling, you know, I don't see so much difference between supposedly primitive notions of things, if you got a pain in your stomach and you say it's a big snake and he's eating this up, it makes sense. So in a sense, also for me to paint something, it helps to give it a form. And in another way, it doesn't help at all. it depends. Yeah, but if for a lost love or something, it doesn't really help you to feel much better. Or maybe it does. Yeah. So it's this all this time of the emotional thing and then the distancing thing and also in the act of the painting, it is true that it's also an escape. It's got many things at the same time because you want the attention and then you want to escape again in your own world. So it's, but there is to make a long story short, there is definitely therapeutic aspects that makes you feel a bit better. But Freud was wrong. It's not all about sex. Okay.